Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, I know for a fact that you had a good weekend of cubing because we were streaming at almost the exact same times all weekend.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun cubing. Ben, you didn't introduce me with my proper title, which is the 17 lands best of three cube all-time trophy leader.
Whoa, snap.
Yeah, which I think is not really anything significant other than the fact that it just shows that I've played a ton of best of three cube on Arena and had a 17 lands account enabled while doing so. I'm not sure that that's as impressive as it sounds, but still, you know, let's get that clickbait going.
I mean, I'm impressed.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, the Arena cube is gas. I really, really like it. I mean, I think, yes, I believe the Tinkerer's cube probably holds a greater place in my heart, and I'd be happy to draft that as well. But I've been having a blast messing around with a lot of different stuff in the Arena cube.
I agree. I like the Arena cube. I like the Tinkerer's cube way better. It's not particularly close for me. How do you feel about this? This just kind of popped into my head the other day. I think the Arena cube now is kind of at the power level of the Modern cube or the Legacy cube. On MTGO. It just kind of feels like a normal low-powered cube.
Yeah, which I kind of like. And I also think that it's getting there with like pockets of synergy. Like I found a little bit more, you know, the card pool is big enough now that I feel like there's a little bit more, I don't know, maneuvering you can do, or I found myself going, oh, that's cool that this card and this card pair well together, etc. So I'm excited about the Arena cube card pool expanding and then being able to get a little bit choosier about the kinds of things they include.
Right. You just get the opportunity to exercise a little more creativity in the draft.
Yeah, for sure. So we're actually going to be talking about cube some more. I mean, I think we have shied away from cube episodes in the past because they haven't been super popular, but I think now with the advent of the cubes coming to Arena, and I think, you know, Vow being in sort of its sunset phase and us just playing a lot of cube, I was like, let's do another one. And I think we got a lot of really good feedback about last week's episode and even got a tweet that inspired this week's episode where someone was like, hey, great show. This was from Yami Kuribo. They said, episode was great. Would love a whole episode dedicated to picks 1+2 in cube. And I think that that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at a bunch of draft logs, talk about the packs, talk about where cards go. And I think it's just going to be a great way to discuss how we approach cube and give people a way to sort of calibrate their picks in terms of, oh, I'm just seeing all of these like powerhouses from their original limited formats, but what does that mean in terms of the landscape of this new cube environment?
Right. Definitely a different ballgame.
Yeah. So before we get into that, just a few housekeeping things to take care of. First things first is the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they feel like they've gotten some value and they want to give something back to us. And of course, we like to give our patrons back stuff in turn. Base level, everybody gets access to the Lords of Limited Discord. And as we are gearing up towards Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, you are going to want to get in on the Discord. It is the place to be to break a format wide open and is also an excellent limited tech support resource 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We got a lot of other great stuff happening over at the Patreon. We have retooled our Patreon reward tier so folks get access to the episode early. There's a private RSS feed for that for folks at certain levels of the Patreon. We also have access to some special additional content, some like draft log reviews, what's the plays that Ben and I do, a few videos of those going up every month, and a lot of other stuff as you move up the reward tiers. And of course, each and every week, we want to shout out our new patrons to welcome them into the fold. So this week, we are welcoming Rick, Cyberdrak, Patrick, Joe, Devin, Mr. Murph, and Keldon. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Appreciate you getting in on the Patreon. Show is also brought to you by Channel Fireball, channelfireball.com. Best place to go for anything and everything you need magic related. They've got Kamigawa Neon Dynasty pre-orders heading up rapidly, as well as Innistrad Midnight Hunt double feature. If you're into some of those black and white cards, you can get any and all of that over at the Channel Fireball Marketplace, along with sweet, sweet singles. And whenever you make any purchases on the Channel Fireball Marketplace, you're going to be supporting someone's LGS, as well as if you use code LOL, all caps, the podcast. And we would really appreciate you doing both of those things.
Yeah, for sure. And last thing, we haven't talked about this in a while, but you know, we got some merch out there, Ben, over at TeePublic, and you can check that out on our website, lordsoflimited.com. There's a merch tab. You click on that, takes you over to TeePublic, and they run a couple pretty great sales every month. So be on the lookout for those. You can get like 35% off any of the merchandise that you purchase over there, which is awesome. You can get hoodies, baseball tees. I'm currently drinking coffee out of my Lords of Limited mug. So there's a lot of really great options over there if you're interested in a little bit of LOL merch in your life. All right, Ben, You ready to take a look at a bunch of cube drafts?
I would love nothing more. Love cube.
All right. Well, let's kick things off here with one of my draft logs. And we're just going to go through the packs for probably, you know, the first 2, 3, 4 maybe picks for each of these, just to give folks an idea of how we're starting drafts and where we think cards go, etc. I think this is just going to be a great opportunity to chat about cube. So first things first, we'll get the lands out of the way. You and I are not taking lands early in the cube. There's Hall of Oracles that taps for a colorless. It filters for a mana of any color, and you can tap, put a ++1 counter on target creature, activate only as a sorcery, and only if you've cast an instant or sorcery spell this turn. And then there's also Scattered Groves, which is the cycling green-white land. So it comes into play tapped, you can cycle it for 2 mana, and taps for green or white. Not really interested in either of those, I would assume.
I agree. Almost never first picking a land. It would have to be super weak and have to be a land like Fabled Passage.
So we'll filter the cards by color here for the rest of the pack. So in white, we've got Alcyid of Life's Bounty. This is single white for a 1/1 enchantment creature with lifelink. You can pay one, sacrifice it, target creature or enchantment you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn.
It's fine. Good role player in maybe a Lurrus style deck as a way to protect your Lurrus. Also just good to get on the board early in a mono white deck and protect some of your bigger white threats that come down at 2, 3, 4 mana value. I don't think you're ever picking it this early, but a fine playable in a white aggressive deck.
Yeah, and also a little bit of life gain if you end up in a black-white life gain matters deck. Though that archetype has seemed to be a little nerfed. You know, one of the cards that I think was probably in that top tier list for me in the past was Witch of the Moors, which is a 5-mana 4/4 death touch in black. And if you gained life on your turn at the beginning of your end step, your opponent sacks a creature and you get to return a creature from your graveyard to your hand. I have found that card difficult to enable.
Yeah, it's way less good this time around.
And also a little story about Alcyid of Life's Bounty. I don't know if you saw this, but in our latest Lords of Limited Showdown video, I had a red-white Lurrus deck against Ben's like insane blue-green ramp deck. And you cast Commit on my Weaponize the Monsters. And I had an Alcyid of Life's Bounty in play. And I didn't sacrifice it to protect it because I forgot about the enchantment part, and someone pointed that out in the YouTube comments, and I was like, oh dang, I might have been able to win the game had I seen that line.
Yeah, for sure.
Another protection spell is Shelter, 1 and a white for an instant. Target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. Draw a card.
Hard for me to imagine ever playing that card.
Yeah, I mean, it's a protection piece for a Lurrus deck is basically the only way I think about this card. There's Isamaru, Hound of Khanda, single white for a 2/2 legendary creature doggo. That's another good role player in a white aggressive deck.
Yeah, total filler. You're never picking it this early.
And a card, again, that continues to hose me and I've never put in a deck is Sarah's Emissary. 4 white for a 7/7 angel with flying. When enters the battlefield, you choose a card type and you and creatures you control have protection from the chosen card type.
Yeah, this card's a beater. I don't know when I would want to pick it, because I've seen it be really powerful. I don't think it's something like in Vintage Cube, though, where you first pick some giant monster and you're like, sweet, I'll draft a reanimator deck, or, you know, I'll draft this big mana ramp deck. It feels a little weirder to me in Arena Cube to do something like that, because I don't think the pieces are quite there reliably enough that you're just going to be able to get there on that style of deck. So I like it. I don't think I would want to first pick it, but maybe that's wrong.
Yeah, I just second all of your thoughts there. The Sarah's Emissary feels like a reanimator piece to me, even though I've had it cast against me many times. But if I'm thinking about it like reanimator, like it's just what? Unburial Rites, Priest of Fell Rites, and Blood for Bones, I feel like are the only three ways to cheat something from your graveyard. And the fact that those, the cheapest of those, really, I mean, I guess Priest is you can do on turn 3 at the earliest. I don't know. It just doesn't feel consistent enough to me.
Right. So I think powerful, and you'd certainly want to keep an eye out for it if you're a white, you know, controlling deck with this as a finisher or have a reanimator package. But I'm not into first picking this.
Yeah. Our options in blue. We have Suspicious Stowaway, which I've been impressed by. 1 and a blue for a 1/1 human rogue werewolf. It can't be blocked. When it deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card, then discard a card. That's the daybound side. The nightbound side is Seafaring Werewolf, which is a 2/1 that can't be blocked. And when it deals combat damage to a player, you just straight up draw a card.
This is fine. It's a utility low drop. You'd be happy to have that in a blue deck for a curve consideration, but I don't think it's super important.
Yeah, I have really liked it, and I think we'll have an opportunity to talk about this style of deck because I think we're going to see this card, but I have liked it quite a bit in blue-white Approach of the Second Suns decks.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. I just recently played against a blue-white Approach of the Second Suns opponent right before we started recording.
That's how much cube we're playing, folks. The other blue card in the pack is Tesseret Artifice Master, 3 blue-blue for a 5 loyalty walker, pluses to make a 1/1 Thopter with flying. You can zero it to draw a card, or if you control 3 or more artifacts, you draw 2 cards. And you can -9 to get an emblem with at the beginning of your end step. Search your library for a permanent card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
I like Planeswalkers a lot in this cube, but I don't like Tesseret much. I don't think it's impactful enough for 5 mana.
That's interesting. I picked this pretty early the other day on stream, and someone was like, do you think Tesseret is good? And I was like, is Tesseret not good? Like, my experience has been very different just because, yes, it's 5 mana, but it pluses to protect itself, which is an important benefit of a Planeswalker. If it pluses to make something that can then protect its loyalty, and then it has pretty darn high loyalty. So even if they deal with the Thopter, like 6 loyalty is tough to get through. I don't know. I've liked the card.
I would say it's good, not great. I just think 4 or 5 drops, I would never pack one, pick one. I would play it if I needed expensive cards, but I think there are a lot of 5 and 6 mana cards that are better than Tesseret.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, that's one of the big lessons that we'll talk about in a little bit, I think, when we look at one of my other drafts in terms of taking expensive stuff early. That's a big cube lesson, is that you don't need to prioritize 5, even like 4 mana plus cards, because you'll always be able to get them. And it's really also important then to recognize what are the cards that are above replacement or like super impactful at that mana value that you can't afford to pass. Because if you take the fillerish stuff early and then you get the stuff that is above replacement or is bomby in cube, and then you take that and you've wasted early picks, that's a feel bad.
Yes. 100%.
All right. Next up, let's look at the black cards in the pack. There's Phyrexian Arena, 1 black-black for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you draw a card and you lose 1 life.
I love a good Phyrexian Arena. I think this is at its best in some sort of a mono black deck with ways to gain life. You know, maybe you've got your gray Merchant of Asphodel and whatnot, but it's not a card you're pack one, pick one. It's a card you want to already be in black and then just pick this up, I think.
Yeah, this is my hot take about Phyrexian Arena. I think this is a card that was good in cube like 8 years ago, and I don't think it's good anymore. I think there's just too much, like the fact that you can draw cards in black, like black has so many effects like this that you don't need one that doesn't affect the board in another way.
Yeah, I'd buy it.
The other black card is God Eternal Bantu. It's 3 black-black for a 5/6 menace. When it enters the battlefield, you can sacrifice any number of other permanents, then draw that many cards. And it has the god text of if it dies or is put into exile from the battlefield, you can just put it into your library third from the top.
This card is total filler, right? Which is just a weird mental shift because this was an absolute bomb in its format. But I think the only place you'd want to play God Eternal Bantu is at the top of your curve in a red-black sacrifice deck. Maybe. And I don't even think it's necessary in a good red-black sacrifice deck.
Yeah, I think I actually just drafted, because I'm a degenerate, while you were playing your match against Blue-White Approach, I was drafting before we recorded this morning, and I drafted a red-black sacrifice deck, and I have Bantu in the deck, partially because I'm just short playables, but also because I have Mayhem Devil. And so it's a really good like combo kill with that. And so I think that makes me actively want it, which like something like Bolas Citadel as well as a combo kill with Mayhem Devil. So Mayhem Devil is 1 black-red for a 3/3. Whenever a player sacrifices a permanent, it deals a damage to any target. And so, you know, you do have Mayhem Devil plus Bantu comes in and you just sack your whole board and you get all those triggers and you can kill your opponent.
Yes, but this is worse than every 2, 3, and 4 mana value card that goes in red black sacrifice, right?
Even one, like even those recurrable one drops like Gutter Bones or whatever, like you want those over this card every day of the week.
Right, that's what I mean. It's just completely replaceable.
Yeah, for sure. The red cards in the pack, we've got Manaform Hellkite, 2 red-red for a 4/4 dragon with flying. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you create an XX red dragon illusion creature token with flying and haste, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast that spell, and then you exile that token at the beginning of the next end step.
This one, not so replaceable. This is a great addition to the cube and a great addition to the blue-red spells deck. Also plays super well with Planeswalkers, the artifact ramp cards, just the type of cards you want to include in a blue-red spells deck. Go well with Manaform Hellkite, and it clocks in a hurry. And cards like that that end the game in 1 to 2 turns are very powerful as threats. So I like Manaform Hellkite quite a bit.
Yeah, I just wrote a little piece for the CFB newsletter that came out yesterday that was about the like best 5 additions to the Arena Cube, and this got my vote for the best new red card. And I think it's just an absolute house. And that's saying a lot, given that like Seasoned Pyromancer was added to the cube as well. You know, like there's some really good cards that it's competing with. And I just think every time I see this, I go, that's a problem. And I assume that if my opponent untaps with it, that they're probably going to beat me that turn or get close to it.
Yep.
The other red card in the pack is not good. Volcanic Salvo. 10 red, though, kind of sweet with Maniform Hellkite because you can get a 12-12 Hasty Dragon. It's a sorcery. It costs X less to cast, where X is the total power of creatures you control, and it deals 6 damage to each of up to 2 target creatures and or planeswalkers.
Yeah, again, totally replaceable.
And then the 3 green cards in the pack, we've got Incubation Druid, 1 and a green for an 0-2. It taps to add 1 mana of any type that a land you control could produce, and if it has a +1/+1 counter on it, you add 3 mana of that type instead, and it has Adapt for 3GG. Adapt 3, you can pump that 5 mana into it to give it 3 +1/+1 counters.
Yeah, Incubation Druid is great. Normally, 2 mana ramp cards are not that powerful in cube, but there's only a couple of 1-drop rampers in the Arena cube, so anything that's green that has 2 mana value and ramps you is, I think, good, and something that should push you into green a little bit, and especially out of weak packs, be in consideration because of a couple things. One, going from 2 to 4 is powerful, right? Just getting a turn ahead of schedule is good in Magic, period. But in cube, then the power level of the cards you're playing with is way higher. So getting a turn ahead of schedule to play your more powerful cards earlier is even better than normal, right? When you're playing a busted 4-drop on turn 3 and a busted 5-drop on turn 4, that advantage you accrue from being ahead of schedule exacerbates itself and gets exponentially more powerful.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a really good point about the 2-mana rampers being really important in Arena Cube, because that's a real mental shift if you've ever vintage cubed before. The 1-mana rampers are so important, and they're the best, you know, unless you're really thinking about something like a Craterhoof Behemoth or, you know, these game breaking top end cards for the green ramp deck. A lot of the time, you're just going to be able to find whatever you want to do that's going to be impactful for 6 mana, 7 mana, 8 mana in those decks. And so the real important thing to make your deck consistent is to get 5 or 6 of those 1-drop rampers. You can't really do that in Arena Cube, so you got to make that shift up to the 2-mana rampers. But I think that heuristic still holds in terms of those are the cards you want to prioritize. It's not about taking Hornet Queen early. It's about taking Incubation Druids early.
Right. And you can get up to 5, 6 2-mana value rampers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what you really want. Again, so you can always make sure, hey, I'm going to know that my opening hand will almost always have one of these, and so I'm going to consistently be able to ramp from 2 to 4, etc. Another ramper, Rishkar, Pima Renegade, 2 and a green for a 2-2. That's actually a pretty sweet curve out, because Incubation Druid only cares about having a counter on it, so you curve out with Rishkar, comes into play as a 2-2, and when it enters the battlefield, you can put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures, and each creature you control with a counter on it has tapped to add green to your mana pool.
This is a fine card. It's worse than every 2-mana value ramper, and I think pretty replaceable.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, maybe we talked about this last week as well, but the green white +1/+1 counter deck has gotten significantly nerfed since the original iteration of the Arena Cube.
I agree. I also have still lost to it.
Yeah, for sure. But I feel like it's more of a green white beats deck than it is a, you know, +1/+1 counters deck. Sure, sometimes you get the Conclave Mentor and you get a Vorinclex at your top end or whatever, but there's not a lot of the synergy pieces there.
Yes, I agree.
Last card is Finale of Devastation. X green green for a sorcery, search your library and or graveyard for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less. Put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. If X is 10 or more, creatures you control get +X/+X and gain haste until end of turn.
Don't put this card in your deck ever.
Wow, just a hard no. Not what if I am doing the green white ramp Mirari's Wake? Can I play this then?
I don't think so. I mean, you could. I just think you're going to be losing more often than not putting this card in your deck. Making a card that you want cost 2 more makes it significantly bad. And I just think if you're making a lot of mana, there are way better finishers in the cube than Finale of Devastation.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Okay, so where are you at here? This is probably not the most powerful pack of cube cards we've ever seen.
For me, this is between Incubation Druid and Maniform Hellkite. And I think I would personally be on Incubation Druid as the cheaper card. And I like playing green decks a lot.
Yeah, I have found it difficult to get into green decks. I found green, I feel like, what do you think about this statement? That I think green blue as a shell, I think green blue can do a lot of different things, but I think green blue as a shell in this cube may be the best deck. And I have found those two colors in particular to be contested in a lot of my drafts.
I agree. I have found them to be contested a lot as well. Blue, certainly way more than I would have expected, feels cut very often. Mm-hmm. And I think green, as long as you prioritize the two mana rampers, you can get into it if you want, but not necessarily like a green, blue, good stuff style deck like you would want to. And what makes me especially sad is that you can't get Wilderness Reclamation anymore. I haven't seen it go late ever.
Oh, I had a great draft the other day where I opened it and I was like, all right, we get to take Brazen Borrower here and we're going to wheel Reclamation. And we did. And the deck was sweet. Reclamation is such a good deck. Yeah, I like taking Incubation Druid here. I landed on the Manaform Hellkite. I was like, look, even though we kept talking about it last week as like blue red is like, you know, one of the best new decks in the format, blah, blah, blah. I haven't played it yet. I've played against it a number of times, but I haven't played with it myself. So I was like, I'd like to try and get into this. And I think Hellkite is a good reason to do so.
Yeah, sweet.
All right. Pack one, pick two, following the Manaform Hellkite. Three lands in the pack. Darkboard Pathway, which is the black-green flip land. Hive of the Eye Tyrant, that's the black creature land. It's three and a black, make it a 3/3 menace. And when it attacks, you exile a card from your opponent's graveyard. I have found incidental graveyard hate to be quite a beating in this cube. Have you found that to be true?
I agree. It's been excellent every time I've had it on my side and been backbreaking every time for the opponent.
Which is just wild. Like, I don't think of there being that much. And maybe it's because I'm playing, like, you know, the recursive black creatures a lot. But even just like nabbing a Spring to Mind or a Commit to Memory, like one of those flashback spells or those aftermath spells, nabbing those, yeah, those recurrable black one drops, or, you know, there's a handful of escape creatures, etc. I found Hive to be good. And then Hostile, great improver, totally unplayable in Vow, got my vote for like worst card in Vow. This is the land that taps for a colorless. You can pay one, tap it to sack a creature, put a soul counter on it. Then if there are three or more, you can flip it and untap it. You only do this at sorcery speed. Flips into a 3/7. When it attacks, you can exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you do, each opponent loses X life and you gain X life, where X is the number of creature cards exiled with creeping in. And you can also pay four to phase it out. I have found this as playable in sacrifice decks as another like cheap sack outlet for your decks.
I'd buy it. You're not going out of your way to pick it up, though, right?
No, and it wheels like all the time, and then you're not really gonna miss it. But like, it does slot into those decks, and it's fairly free in those style of decks. There's an artifact here, Chromatic Orrery, 7 mana for a legendary artifact. You can spend mana as though it were mana of any color. You can tap it to add 5 generic mana, or you can pay 5 and tap it to draw a card for each color among permanents you control.
This would be another on my list of don't put this in your deck style cards.
Yeah, I agree with that. If we're looking at blue-red to follow up Manaform Hellkite, there's nothing really great, right? There's a Scorch Spitter as our only red card. Red for a 1/1. Whenever it attacks, you deals 1 damage to the player or planeswalker it's attacking. This is fine in a mono-red aggro deck or whatever, but not anything you need to prioritize.
Right. I think if you want to draft that style of deck, though, you're supposed to pick that card here.
Right. I mean, much like the, you know, 1 and 2 mana rampers for a green deck, the 1 mana aggro cards for red decks, or like the 1 mana recurrable threats for sacrifice decks or whatever. Those are really important for consistency reasons.
Yep.
Ruined Crab is also in the pack. Blue for an 0/3 crab. It has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent mills 3 cards. This card is powerful, I think.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Have you not lost to mill?
No.
No, I have lost to mill a lot in this cube. Not with cards like, I think Patient Rebuilding is quite bad and slow, but I've found Ruined Crab and sometimes Tutelage to be pretty oppressive.
Huh, yeah. So like, is this on your radar to pick here at all?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think this is like a little early for it, and I don't want to like, I don't know, I'm not trying to, I don't think it's like at its best in a blue-red shell, but I think in like a blue-green ramp deck, I would happily play this.
So are you thinking it's just a threat to end the game? Is it going in a blue control deck as a win con?
I think it can go in a blue deck as a win con. I think I wouldn't want it as my only piece of that puzzle. Like, I'd want a Teferi or a Jace or something like that. But I do think it slots in there. But I think it's at its best as a piece in blue-green when you've got, like, Cultivates or Settle the Wilds or whatever. Like, those things that ramp you via lands.
All right.
There's a red-white card as well. There's Lightning Helix. Red-white for an instant. Deal 3 damage to any target, and you gain 3 life.
That's going to be great in any red-white deck that can cast it, but I don't think you're supposed to pick it aggressively. There's just so many red burn spells that deal three, and Lightning Helix is going to be one of the best. I just don't think you need to prioritize it, though.
And that's something that I think you really want to think about in terms of uniqueness versus redundancy. Like, I'm never taking those deal three effects in red highly because I know I can get access to them if red is going to be open. Similarly with black removal spells, you can maybe make a case for black removal spells that target planeswalkers as being a bit more unique. So something like a Murderous Rider or a Baleful Mastery that can target a planeswalker, I think maybe moves up a little bit in value than just a straight up kill spell like Heartless Act. But you really want to think about, oh, I can get that effect versus, oh, this card is the only card in the cube that does this thing. And then, you know, that's going to be something that's above replacement level. That's what we're talking about here.
I will say, though, the red deal three effects go up if you're forcing mono red, I think. Otherwise, if you're just playing them in a blue red shell or something where you want a removal spell, then they're less important, right?
And in those red deck win style decks, the ones that can go face are more valuable than the ones that can't. So something like Skewer the Critics that can deal damage to your opponent, the any target ones, are going to be better than something like Scorching Dragonfire.
Yep.
What else we got in this pack? A couple black removal spells. Hagra Mauling is 2BB for an instant. Destroy target creature costs 1 less to cast if an opponent controls no basic lands. And then it's also enter the battlefield tapped black land on the other side. Mythos of Nethroi, 2BB for an instant. Destroy target non-land permanent if it's a creature or if green-white was spent to cast this spell. Those are both fine.
Yeah, fine, playable, replaceable.
A card that I have liked in probably certainly my Lurrus decks, but also just in, you know, white double spelling decks, cheap white decks, Clarion Spirit. 1W for a 2/2 spirit. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying.
The card's good. I don't think you're going out of your way to pick it up, though. I think in the white 2-drop threats, it is in the mid to slightly above mid tier.
Yeah, I'd put it like slightly above, I think. And then a whole mess of green cards here. We've got Fauna Shaman, 1G, 2/2. Green tap, discard a creature card, search your library for a creature card, reveal it and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
It's not a card you need to prioritize, but it can do great work in green decks where you have a lot of the 2-mana mana dorks, because when you draw those late in the game, they're really bad. So if you have a way to cash them in with Fauna Shaman to go get your Hornet Queen, for example, or whatever, that can be really powerful. More typically in cube, Fauna Shaman is used in a recurring nightmare style deck, but obviously that's not on the arena cube, so I think a little less good than normal.
Yeah, it can also own your red-white Lurrus opponents when you have Thragtusk in your deck.
That is a feature of that card as well, yes.
Yeah, as Ben knows quite well against me. There's Blex, Vexing Pest, 2G for a 3/2. Other pests, bats, insects, snakes, and spiders you control get +1/+1, and when it dies, you gain 4 life. And the flip side is sorcery, 2BB. You look at the top 5 cards in your library, you can put any number of them into your hand for paying 3 life for each of them, and the rest go in your graveyard. I like Blex in my Karuga decks because a 3-drop that like gains you life when it dies is pretty good. And also, guess what this synergizes with? Lolth, baby. Making your 2/1 spiders 3/2s.
That is going deep.
That's me, baby.
I have never looked at Blex more than 2 seconds in a pack.
I mean, it's not a card you need to eye pick at all. Like, you'll know when it's good for you, and it's rarely going to be so. There's Hornet Queen, 4GG for a 2/2 flying death touch. When it ETBs, you make 4/1/1 insect creature tokens with flying and death touch. This is a real beating. This is really hard to deal with unless you have a sweeper.
Yeah, I think it's the best green finisher in the cube.
Yep. And there's Oracle of Moldiah, 3G for a 2/2. You can play an additional land on each of your turns. You can play with the top card of your library revealed, and you may play lands from the top of your library. My rule is, if it's good enough for Vintage Cube, it's good enough for the Arena Cube.
That is a good rule. And I think this is tough between Oracle and Hornet Queen for me, because if you take Oracle here and you don't wheel Hornet Queen, you're pretty sad. I think I would land on Oracle over Hornet Queen, hoping it wheels. And I think Oracle's probably good in every green deck that's not just a green ramp deck. So it probably is just Oracle on raw power. There are other finishers, even if you don't get the best finisher.
Yeah, I mean, I took Oracle here, and I was not expecting Hornet Queen to wheel at all. Like, I just don't think that card is going to wheel in pack one. I think people like that card a lot, probably a lot more than I do, and are going to snap it up. But I guess a person can dream. All right, so we've got Oracle and Manaform Hellkite. Those are not two cards that I think go in the same deck, right? I'm hoping to not draft a green-red deck, I think, in this cube basically ever, and I don't anticipate those two cards going in the same deck.
I think that is a good place to be mentally.
All right, so moving on to pack one, pick three, got to talk about this card that we're going to see, but we'll tease it a little bit here. So let's talk about the red cards in the pack. A couple burn spells. Unholy Heat is red for an instant, deals 2 damage to target creature or planeswalker. If you have Delirium, which means 4 different card types in your graveyard, it deals 6 instead. And there's Scorching Dragonfire, 1 unred for an instant, deal 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker. If it would die, you exile it instead.
Yeah, again, totally replaceable. You're never picking any of them early.
Grim Lavamancer here is single red for a 1/1 human wizard. Red, tap, exile 2 cards from your graveyard. Grim Lavamancer deals 2 damage to any target.
I kind of feel like Grim Lavamancer is in the Phyrexian Arena boat. I don't think it's that great in cube anymore.
Yeah, I agree. There's some awkwardness in terms of, one, I think it has tension in red-black, which is the red deck I will often end up in the most, because a lot of your stuff you want to come back. You're reassembling skeletons, or you have Woe Strider, and so or Phoenix of the Ash, right? You have one of these escape threats that you don't want to exile other cards from your graveyard to not be able to recur. So I feel like Grim Lavamancer in my mind only goes in an Obosh deck where it's going to deal 4. Like, that's a powerful thing. You know, you drop Obosh for on turn 6 or whatever, and then you can, or when you have 6 mana available, and then you also have this as an activation. But I agree. I think it's just kind of gotten outclassed a little bit. Maybe it's still good in Vintage Cube, and maybe Arena Cube just can't support it well enough yet.
That's possible. And I think it is really good in a red aggressive deck, right? I think I've felt the same thing that you have. I've played it in red black, and I've just felt a lot of tension with wanting things in the graveyard and then having to exile them to make Grim Lavamancer good. So maybe it's just bad deck building on my part, and Grim Lavamancer is still great.
Sure. And there's also Sarkhan the Masterless, 3 red red for a 5 loyalty walker. For +1, until end of turn, each planeswalker you control becomes a 4/4 red dragon creature and gains flying. -3 makes a 4/4 red dragon creature token with flying. And whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, each dragon you control deals 1 damage to that creature.
Whoa, I just zoomed on this card. Is this a new feature on 17 lands? Where when you zoom over the card, below it, it says average pick 5.87, seen by users 2,119 times, picked 465 of those 2,119 times.
I don't know how recent that is, but it's been there for a little bit.
Wow, that is super cool. I think that's a great way probably to just get better at cube too, assuming that people...
No. Let's just relax here with using the data on 17 lands for cube drafting. So here's my, and I am a big data boy now, as you know, but here's my pitch against the data. One, the sample sizes are way too small. And two, unlike a normal limited format, like, no one drafts cube the same way. And so it's really hard to like glean anything from like what the pick order is or like when something is going. Like, I don't think that's going to really give you good information, because like even you and I, who are pretty similar in our approaches to cube, do stuff pretty differently from draft to draft.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I'm very impressed by that feature, though. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a sweet feature. So of those 4 red cards, do anything that you like, or you're just like, I'm hoping for something better?
No, I think Sarkhan is excellent. I think that is a great red threat at 5 CMC, and I think it is above replacement level pretty significantly in the 5 mana slot, and I think I would be giving strong consideration to Sarkhan. Card I would not be unhappy to first pick.
And are you nervous at all about starting off your draft with 4-drop, 4-drop, 5-drop if you were to take Sarkhan here?
No, because you're never playing Oracle with Sarkhan and Manaform Hellkite, so it would be like having 4-drop, 5-drop, which is not ideal, but I think both of those cards are way above replacement level in the 4 and 5 mana slot. So I think having powerful cards locked up at the top end is not the worst, especially in a color like red that does have a lot of good cheap threats.
Mm-hmm. And you have to imagine you're going to wheel one of these three cards in Unholy Heat, Scorching Dragonfire, and Lavamancer if you were to take Sarkhan here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A couple colorless cards here in Golden Egg. That's the 2 mana artifact. It ETBs. You draw a card and you can pay 1 to sacrifice it, add a mana of any color, or pay 2, sacrifice it to gain 3 life. And Solemn Simulacrum, 4 mana for a 2/2. When it ETBs, you search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. And when it dies, you may draw a card. Just a nice classic 3-for-1.
Yeah, I think Golden Egg doesn't do enough that you're hoping to include it most of the time, unless you're doing cute things like blinking it, and even then it's a little fillerish. Solemn Simulacrum, though, tried and true cube card, It's great to ramp with. I think card advantage, blocks, it's everything a control deck wants to do and is a very good card at the 4 CMC slot in any kind of a deck that wants to go to the late game.
Yeah, I'm going to run through the rest of the cards in this pack pretty quickly. There's Mull Drifter. That's the 5-mana 2/2 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, you draw 2 cards. You can evoke it for 3 mana. Angel of Sanctions, 5-mana 3/4 flyer. ETBs, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield. Has Embalm for 6 mana. There's Phyrexian Obliterator. That's the quad black 5/5 trample when it's dealt damage. The person who is dealt that damage has to sacrifice that number of permanents. Scavenging Ooze, 1 green 2/2 green exile target card from a graveyard. If it was a creature card, put a +1 counter on Ooze and you gain a life. Thrix the Sudden Storm, 5-mana 4/5 flash flyer, makes other expensive stuff cheaper and uncounterable. Bane Veil, which is the 1 blue instant creatures your opponents control get -2/-0 until end of turn, and it's a blue ETB tap land on the flip side. None of that holds a candle to the last card in this pack, Ben.
Wilderness Reclamation, baby. 3G enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, untap all lands you control.
So you said you haven't seen this card? Like, you feel like you, or have you tried to wheel it and it doesn't wheel? Is that what you mean? Or you just haven't seen it?
I just haven't seen it. I would never let it try to wheel at this point. I feel like people are on to how busted it is and how busted it is in blue-green instant speed stuff. And it makes me really sad because the last time this cube was around, all I did was draft, assuming I was going to get Wilderness Reclamation every time, and I got Wilderness Reclamation every time.
Yeah. So, and have you seen it on the other side of the battlefield? Like, you feel confident other people are doing it as well?
I've faced it a couple times, and I was very jealous.
Yeah. The card is fantastic. I took it here. I just wanted to give us an opportunity to talk about the deck. I know we did on our last episode of the cube, like, allude to it. And when we did our companion cube episode, we talked about it, I think, a little bit more in depth. But for folks who don't know, or for who are going to see it in the last week of the cube coming up and want to try and draft it, like, what are you looking for when you see this deck? Why is this card so powerful?
It essentially doubles your mana, assuming you pick good instant speed cards, which there are a lot of. So then you can have counter spells. Essentially, once you stick Wilderness Reclamation and you have a counter spell in your hand, you're never tapping out the rest of the game while continuing to advance your board. You just have so much control over what happens in the game. The deck also got a sweet new addition in Hullbreaker Horror, which is one of the most busted cards possible with Wilderness Reclamation, but you want anything that says instant speed on it. So like Thrix or something like Brazen Borrower to bounce a threat and then stick a threat on your opponent's end step. But just doubling your mana is super busted in general. There's a reason this was one of the most broken cards in Standard, and it is that powerful in the cube because all those cards that it was good with are in this cube too.
The other thing to be on the lookout for, not only stuff that is an instant or has flash, is mana sinks. So something like Spectral Sailor that you can pay 4 mana to draw a card into, or Terramander is just like a one shot, hey, I get to like pump mana into this to put a bunch of counters on it. Like Adapt is great for that. Or what's it like, Dragon Scale Elite, Dragon's Guard Elite, the 1 green 2/2 with Magecraft, and then you can pay 4 GG to double the +1/+1 counters on it. Creatures that have those like big mana sinky things are also great with Wilderness Reclamation. You just want as many ways to use your mana on your opponent's turn as possible.
You're thinking too small. I want Golos Activations, baby.
Golos Activations on your opponent's turn doesn't do anything.
You get a Golos Activate on your turn and then have your mana up for all your instants opponent's turn.
Sure. Yeah. That's fair. So I took the Wilderness Reclamation here, and that was sort of like, you know, a lot of my drafts, when they don't start with powerful things, will be like, let me figure out, and maybe sometimes I figure out a lane, like Black Red Sacrifice is open because I see a Judith late or whatever. But then here, when I see those build arounds like Wilderness Reclamation and Approach of the Second Sun, those would be my sort of like right below, not below in terms of power, but like below in terms of reliability of when I'm going to see them in the draft, below the companions. I feel like Reclamation and Approach are just like, those are clearly defined archetypes in my mind, and those are strong decks that I want to draft.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Ben, we're not going to have time to do many drafts today. I thought we were going to have a lot. I think we were just going to wham, bam through these. Reading cube cards takes a while.
Yeah, we had some show notes laid out. We were talking about going through 6 cube drafts with all of the first 3 picks like that. I think going forward, let's just take a look at the cards that are in consideration like we normally do. I think it was helpful to just see the types of cards that are replaceable, but I don't think we need to do that for every pack from now on.
That seems fair.
So this is another one of your drafts, cards that are in consideration. Wolf Willow Haven, 1G Aura Enchant Land. Whenever Enchanted Land is tapped for mana, its controller adds an additional green, and you can pay 4 green to sacrifice it to make a 2/2 green wolf creature token. That's in consideration as a 2 CMC green ramper.
Mm-hmm.
There's Treasure Map, two mana artifact, one tap, scry one, put a landmark counter on treasure map. Then if there are three or more landmark counters on it, you remove those counters and transform it and create three colorless treasure tokens with tap, sack this artifact, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. And then on the back, you have Treasure Cove, which taps for a colorless or taps to sack one of those treasure tokens you made to draw a card.
I've liked Treasure Map quite a bit. I don't think it's on the power level of, you know, there's only two colorless mana rocks in the cube. There's Mindstone, Cold Steel Heart, and Guardian Idol. I don't think it's like quite there because, you know, it doesn't make the additional mana until many turns down the road. But I have found it to be a powerful, cheap effect.
Yeah, I think any controlling deck or mid-rangey style deck would be happy with a treasure map.
Yep.
There's Midnight Reaper. I like this card a lot. 2 and a black for a 3-2. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, Midnight Reaper deals 1 damage to you and you draw a card.
Right. I mean, compare Midnight Reaper to Phyrexian Arena. How much better is Reaper as a 3-mana 3-2 that does basically what Arena does?
It's significantly better.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Then there's Scarab God also. 3 blue-black, 5/5 legendary creature god. At the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses X life and you scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control. You pay 2 blue-black, exile target creature card from a graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a 4/4 black zombie. And when the Scarab God dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step.
Yeah, this card is busto. I think it's kind of worse than in previous iterations of the Arena Cube, but I would probably still put it in that like upper tier of just like raw power cards.
It's definitely top 10, top 15 threats in the cube, right?
Yeah, I think so. So here's my reticence, I guess, of picking Scarab God, is that I don't think blue-black is a good deck. Or I guess I don't know. Like, I just feel like it doesn't have any identity in the cube. And the thing about blue-black that is tough is that both blue and black want to be base colors for you, right? They're both very mana-intensive colors to have, or color-intensive colors to have. And the fact that this is 5 mana, and so it's on the expensive side, not to say that it's, like, you know, replaceable or anything, right? It's certainly above replacement. It's very, very powerful. And every time it lands on the battlefield, it demands to be answered with. And even if it's answered, you just get it back almost every time. But I don't know. I've just found it hard to take here. Are you just like windmill slamming it in this pack?
I think it's close between Treasure Map and Scarab God. I think I would land on Scarab God because I love playing with that card and it has a great mana sink for Wilderness Reclamation, all that sort of stuff. So I have fond memories of doing gross things with it. So I think I would take Scarab God, but I think Treasure Map is certainly reasonable.
All right. Yeah, I landed on Map here, but I think I definitely recognize that like Scarab God is the most powerful card in this pack, period.
Right. And I think the advantage of taking Treasure Map here, which you did, is that you get to put a cheap card in your deck and then leave that 5 CMC slot open down the road, as well as not commit to any colors yet, right? You get to read signals. So that's all upside for Treasure Map.
Yeah, that was my thinking. And there's also a Fabled Passage in the pack, which is one of the only lands that we like. That's the one that it's like Evolving Wilds effectively, but if you control 4 or more lands when you fetch the land, it comes into play untapped. I think you could make a case for that too as a similar kind of thing of, hey, this leaves you open, etc. But I just like Map a little better.
I agree. I think Fabled Passage is the best land in the cube.
Yes.
Moving on to pack 1, pick 2. Much weaker pack here. You see the following cards as options. There's Elspeth's Nightmare, 2 and a black for the Saga. Chapter 1, when it ETBs, destroy target creature and opponent controls power 2 or less. Chapter 2, target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-creature, non-land card from it. That player discards that card. And Chapter 3, exile target opponent's graveyard.
I love this card. I think it's really powerful in the cube. Like, you know, if you think about what the best decks are, unless you're playing against a true, like, blue control deck or whatever, like blue-white control, even against blue-green ramp, this threatens to just, like, take out their Incubation Druid, take out their Sublime Epiphany or discover the formula before they can cast it. And then it's just really good against all the other creature decks.
Yeah, I think other than the bombs, Elspeth's Nightmare might be the biggest groan test in the cube.
I mean, because sometimes you just go, oh, no, like there's just like no way to avoid the 2-for-1. And also, again, the graveyard exile can be relevant in matchups as well.
Yep. There's Forsaken Crossroads as a great new land. ETB's tapped. When it enters the battlefield, you choose a color. And when it enters the battlefield, scry one. If you weren't the starting player, you can untap Forsaken Crossroads instead. And then it taps for 1 mana of the chosen color.
Love that card.
There's Valky, God of Lies. 1 and a black for the 2/1. When it enters the battlefield, each opponent reveals their hand. For each opponent, exile a creature card they revealed this way until Valky leaves the battlefield. And you can pay X, choose a creature card exiled with Valky with a converted mana cost X, and have it become a copy of that card. backside is a Planeswalker, Tybalt, Cosmic Imposter, 5 black red for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker, that +2s to exile the top card of each player's library, -3s to exile target artifact or creature, -8 exile all cards from all graveyards, add red, 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 and you get an emblem when it ETBs with that you can play the cards that this exiles.
I love a good secret 7 drop in my Lurrus decks.
Yeah, for sure. And then there's also Rekindling Phoenix, 2 red red for a 4/3 with flying. Whenever it dies, create a 0/1 red elemental creature token with at the beginning of your upkeep. Sacrifice this creature and return Rekindling Phoenix from your graveyard to the battlefield and give it haste until end of turn. This card is absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really tough to deal with. I had to like go through some hoops against this the other day where I think I traded with it in combat or had to burn it on end step or something, and then use Baral's expertise to bounce the little 0/1 token that it made.
Yeah, card is a beating. I think I would be between those three cards myself, the Nightmare, the Phoenix, and the Valky.
Yeah, I landed on Nightmare here myself, partially because there was a Skyclave Shade in the pack, which is a really good card in the black sacrifice decks. So that's 1 and a black for a 3/1 that can't block. You can also kick it for 2 and a black, and it comes in with 2+1, and it comes in with 2+1/+1 counters on it. And it has Landfall. You can just cast it from your graveyard when a land enters the battlefield under your control. And I was like, this gives me a little bit of direction. And oftentimes this deck is open, so I can maybe assume that card wheels.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. All right, so you got a Treasure Map and an Elspeth's Nightmare in your pile. Moving on to pack 1, pick 3, see the following cards as options. There's a Kolaghan's Command, 1 black red for an instant, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Target player discards a card, destroy target artifact, and it deals 2 damage to target creature or player. There's also Approach of the Second Sun, 6 and a white for the sorcery. If this spell was cast from your hand and you've cast another spell named Approach, you win the game. Otherwise, put Approach into its owner's library, 7 from the top, and you gain 7 life.
I really do think this is, like, this and Reclamation get my vote for, like, best build arounds in the cube. I just, like, windmill slam this. This gives my deck a direction. I think Approach is best home. And probably only home is blue-white, because blue gives you so much velocity. I mean, even in this pack, there's a Thirst for Discovery, 2 and a blue instant, draw 3 cards, then discard 2 cards unless you discard a basic land. There's Sensor, which is 1 and a blue for a counterspell unless its controller pays 1, but it has cycling for single blue. So, you know, just get all these cards that let you dig towards Approach, and then also dig towards Approach again when it's, you know, cast and put 7 deep into your library.
Yeah, but it's hard to know that kind of thing if you're new to the cube, right? So that's where we're trying to be helpful here, right? Like, that Approach is a card that matters a lot. And if you see it and you want to build that deck, you can do that thing. And so just going into a cube draft, knowing that sort of stuff helps make it a little less daunting, I think, when you're doing your first 3-4 cube drafts.
Well, because it lets you know, like, but this is 7 mana, and Ethan and Ben said 7 mana stuff is replaceable. It's like, no, but this is one to look out for. This is one to say, oh, this is a game plan for an entire deck and is worth taking.
And honestly, if you're cubing for the first time, if you just see a card like that that pushes you in a direction, you see a Wilderness Reclamation, you see an Approach, or you see mono red cards or whatever, and you just decide, okay, I see this, I'm going to try to build this deck. Like, if you think about getting a powerful card early and building a deck around it, rather than trying to read signals or do all that sort of stuff, I think you're just going to be way better off.
Yeah, and the only time that I abandon ship, and I don't think we'll get to one of those drafts here, but the only time that I abandon ship on something like that, like if I start out with a Golos or whatever, and I'm not seeing the 2 mana rampers in green or whatever, the things that I feel like enable the deck, that's when I move off of it, right? I'm not like, I'll abandon ship for that. But if I'm seeing the support, the cheap support for the deck I want to draft, I'm full steam ahead, baby.
Yes, I completely agree. What about Kolaghan's Command? Have you seen that card? Like that card?
I've liked that card. I've seen it, liked it. I've played it, played against it. It's ridiculous. I didn't realize I played against Tan and Grace, actually, in my last round of my CFB video that'll be out this week, playing Cube. And he had Kolaghan's Command plus Timeless Witness in his deck. And I was like, oh, God, that's just an infinite loop. Like, Witness gets back Command, then Command gets back Witness once it dies. Like, that blew my mind. It was ridiculous. And also, like, I was playing a deck, I think I had Bolas's Citadel in my deck, and like, couldn't stick that because Kolaghan's Command was going to threaten to blow it up. So obviously the ceiling on this card is quite high. I also think it's not as busted as it is Like in Vintage Cube, this card is phenomenal because everybody's running artifacts, right? So this is so often a straight up two for one. But I do think this card is powerful.
You heard it here first, folks. Incoming, Ethan Sachs drafts every cube as Jund Cube.
Jund Cube, baby. Gotta do it. Let's see if we can't squeeze in one more draft here, Ben. Let's do one of yours.
All right, to round things out here, we're going to take a look at one of my drafts. So pack one, pick one. See the following cards as options. There's Wolfwill Haven, again, another two mana value ramper. There's Culligan's Command, which we just talked about. And really, that's about it. Like, there's blue counter spells. Like, there's a neutralize if you're into that. One blue instant counter target spell with cycling two. There's not really a card to force mono red with here. There's no real sacrifice pieces. This is a pretty weak pack.
Yeah, this is a really weak pack. So I like taking either of those two. I think is totally reasonable. One thing we haven't talked about yet is out of these weak packs, one of the things that it will often be a tiebreaker for me is if I feel like I can take a card and wheel a card for the same deck. But because this pack is so weak, so like let's say there was one of those like recurrable one drops, like a Gutter Bones or something in the pack. Then I'd be like, ooh, I'd like to take Culligan's Command here because I can probably wheel that other good piece of the puzzle for a black-red sack deck or whatever. But you don't even have that here. And like, you know, you can make a case for, well, you could take Neutralize and wheel Spectral Sailor or something. But that's one, not necessarily going to happen. And two, like, I don't want to draft blue or fight for blue for cards of that quality, you know? So I think I like just taking Wolf Willowhaven here. That seems fine.
Right. Well, and I think the other way to think about this, too, is that this would be like looking at a pack of Crimson Vow that is all C's, C pluses. Like Wolf Willowhaven is not a B level card really in cube. Like it's kind of close to B minus. But you got to get some other two mana rampers before you're really excited about all your two mana rampers. So I think you're just taking a card here, and it would be like starting your draft with Spore Crawler or something.
Yeah, like Voldaren Epicure.
Yes, you're putting literal zero weight on the card that you're drafting here going forward into the next pack.
Yep, exactly.
All right, moving on to pack one, pick two with the Wolf Willowhaven in your pile. You see the following cards as options. There's a Conclave Tribunal, three and a white for the enchantment with Convoke. When it enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until Conclave Tribunal leaves the battlefield.
This is, again, good, but not above replacement in my mind, because there's also a Banishing Light. There's also a Cast Out, right? There are similar style effects in white that you can get.
I agree with that, yeah. I mean, this is, again, another stinker of a pack here. I mean, I'm even struggling to come up with cards in consideration, and I think the only one really is the one I end up picking, which is Sword of Body and Mind. So it's three mana for an artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+2 and has protection from green and from blue. Has an equip cost of 2, and whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you put a 2/2 green wolf creature token onto the battlefield, and that player puts the top 10 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard.
I had a really sweet match with this, like, artifact deck I drafted the other day where I had to let my opponent hit me with the Sword of Body and Mind to hopefully have them mill one of my two sweepers so that I could get it back with Balaged Recovery, and that worked.
Nice.
I think Sword of Body and Mind, again, it's not quite Phyrexian Arena levels, but I do think it's like this card was a real banger in 2013 in cube, and I don't think it's that good anymore. It's just like three mana to do nothing, equip cost of 2. Sometimes it's relevant, but sometimes it like helps your opponent because you like don't want to hit their, I don't know, you don't want to mill them. It can certainly win games, but I don't love it.
Yeah, I've cooled on it a little bit, which is kind of crazy because the first time around I was like, why did they put this in the cube? It's way better than every other card in the cube. Mm-hmm. And I've kept it on the sidelines in some decks this time around, which felt weird to me, but I did it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's powerful in some decks, certainly very powerful in some matchups, especially having protection from what I think in theory is the best two color combination in the cube, but sometimes it just doesn't get there.
Right. And it's, I think, goes way up in value in best of three, where you can sideboard it appropriately. But I think in best of one, I think you're probably going to play it a lot of the time, but not 100% of the time.
Agreed. But yeah, what you don't have a good, if there were a one or two mana ramper in green in this pack, I think you would take that as a follow-up over Sword.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we grab the Sword of Body and Mind, moving on to pack one, pick three. Another really weak pack here. Jeez. So cards like Fight with Fire, 2 and a red, sorcery, deals 5 damage to target creature. If it was kicked for 5 and a red, it deals 10 damage divided as you choose among any number of targets instead. There's Faithful Disciple, 1 and a white for the 2/2 vigilance. Whenever it dies, draft a card from Faithful Disciple's spellbook. There's Sphinx of Foresight, 2 blue, 4/4 flyer. At the beginning of your upkeep, scry 1. If you had it in your opening hand, you scry 3 on your first upkeep if you reveal it. But I mean, none of those cards are very exciting. There's First a Row in Games, 2 and a green for the Aura Saga. Chapter 1, you make a 1/1 white human soldier token. Chapter 2, put 3++/+1 counters on target creature you control. Chapter 3, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, draw 2 cards. Chapter 4, you create a gold token.
Yeah, I mean, this pack is super weak. There's 4 lands here, and I could see just being like, eh. Like, the things that I'm looking for in a pack are, 1, are there those, like, busted, irreplaceable top-end cards? No. Okay, are there those really good, cheap glue cards or cheap, you know, enablers for certain archetypes? Not really even. Like, I guess Faithful Disciple is fine in various white decks, but it's not anything to write home about. So I might just be tempted to take a land here. I have not. I mean, First Rowan Games follows up Haven in terms of being a green card. I have not played at Rowan Games myself, and I have found it pretty easily disruptible on my opponent's side to be able to just like stop them from getting to put counters on something and then draw, like kill the thing that they're putting the counters on in response, and then they don't get to draw. So I found that card to not be that powerful in cube. But again, this pack just, it largely just doesn't matter.
I agree. I took First Rowan Games very unhappily because I've had all the same experiences you have. I have played it, but it's been super disruptible. But I think the lands are just whatever, too. I think lands without a direction is just awkward in Arena Cube.
I agree. I agree for sure.
So I did take the First Rowan Games here to match up with green cards. And then moving on to pack 1, pick 4, we see the best pack we've seen all draft by quite a long shot here. So cards in consideration, there's Thraben Inspector, white for a 1/2. When it enters the battlefield, investigate.
Yeah, I love that card. It's really strong. I mean, you're just happy to play that in literally any deck that has planes in it.
And so why is that so strong, right? You're looking at all these other cards that are just absurdly busted, right? Thraben Inspector is a worse Magic card than First Rowan Games in any normal limited format.
Yeah, so in cube, though, when you think about what white is trying to do, it's generally either aggressive, and you're happy to have just any amount of one drops in those aggressive decks for that consistency thing we were talking about. Then also, it's not a bad draw late because it's just going to replace itself, right? It makes the clue. Then also, you think about what white does in the cube is it has this like enter the battlefield blink thing going on with a card that's in the pack here as well, Yorian Sky Nomad with Teleportation Circle. You know, you pair it with blue and maybe you get Soul Herder or Thassa, but that's a theme that's seeded into the cube, and Thraben Inspector is great in those style of decks as well. And so it's just going to be a really good, cheap thing, right? It's not going to, unlike taking a 5-drop that you can only run so many 5-drops, you can happily run as many 1-drops as you want in any cube deck, and you're not going to feel like, oh, I have too many of these, right?
Right. All right. So there's also Skewer the Critics, 2 and a red for sorcery, spectacle cost of red, deals 3 damage to any target.
Yeah, fine. I mean, it can go face, but I'm not going to get into red for a card like Skewer the Critics.
There's Weaponize the Monsters, red enchantment, 2 mana, sack a creature, Weaponize the Monsters, deals 2 damage to any target.
This card is really good. I think it's really surprising to me how good it is in Arena Cube. Like, you would think, it's an enchantment. You have to pay 2 mana to sacrifice something. Like, it's not a free sack outlet, like something like Woe Strider or Priest of the Forgotten Gods. But I have closed out many, many games with Weaponize the Monsters this cube season.
Yep, card is great. And I think black-red sacrifice is one of the best archetypes in the cube. Yeah. Like, doesn't have the most intrinsically powerful cards, but just as far as synergy, is one of the most synergistic decks in the cube.
I'd call it, like, it feels to me like drafting Jund in Vintage Cube does. Like, I don't think it's a tier 1 archetype, but in terms of its consistency and reliability in terms of being able to draft it, draft in and draft out, I think red-black gets there a lot.
Yep. There's also Elspeth's Nightmare, which we've already talked about being completely busted.
Mm-hmm.
One of your favorites, Yorian Sky Nomad, 3 and then Azorius hybrid mana. Legendary creature, bird, serpent, companion, 4/5 flyer, whenever it enters the battlefield, exile any number of other non-land permanents you own and control, return those cards to the battlefield at the beginning of the next end step, and it's got companion, your starting deck size contains at least 20 cards more than the minimum deck size.
Well, I know what I'm taking out of this pack.
Is it really just that clear cut for you?
Yeah, I mean, I see what you take. It's a card we haven't talked about yet, and I think that's like totally reasonable. But the thing that I really like about Yorian is I think the ceiling is higher than anything else in this pack, and it gives me a direction. Like taking something like Approach or Wilderness Reclamation, taking a companion gives me something to work towards. Now, if something better presents itself to me in terms of like an open lane, I'm happy to do it. But if that doesn't happen, Yorian is the kind of card that you want to take early so you can make playables. And so I think this is a great time to take it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it is definitely in consideration for me. There's also Glasspool Mimic, 2 and a blue for the 0/0. You can have it enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature you control. And then on the backside, it's a land. Been very impressed with Glasspool Mimic.
Yeah, sweet.
And then there's also Noxious Gearhulk, 4 black-black for a 5/4 menace. When it ETBs, you can destroy another target creature. If a creature is destroyed this way, you gain life equal to its toughness.
Yeah, I mean, this card does everything you want a 6-drop to do. It's going to kill your opponent's best threat. It's going to gain you life. So if you're behind, it catches you up. And then it is also itself a really strong threat as a 5/4 menace.
Yeah, and great to blink. There's a lot of ways to abuse it, I think. So for me, this ultimately came down to Yorian or Noxious Gearhulk. And I had already played with Yorian several times, and I had not cast any Noxious Gearhulks yet, so I ended up on the Noxious Gearhulk.
Well, and I also think that, you know, you're seeing Elspeth's Nightmare and Weaponize the Monsters in this pack, and so it's not unreasonable to think that one of those can come back if you, you know, start to navigate yourself into black-red.
Yeah, I definitely had that on my radar as well. So pack one, pick five, see the following cards as options. There's not great cards. There's Supreme Will as the best blue card. 2 and a blue, instant, choose one, counter target spell, unless its controller pays 3. Or you can look at the top 4 cards of your library, put one of them in your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Good in a control deck. There's Mayhem Devil, 1 black-red for a 3/3. When a player sacrifices a permanent, Mayhem Devil deals 1 damage to any target. There's Magmatic Channeler, maybe if you want to abandon ship and go down a spells route, 1 red for a 1/3. As long as there are 4 more instant sorcery cards in your graveyard, it gets +3/+1. And you can tap, discard a card to exile the top 2 cards of your library and then choose one of them to play this turn. And that's really about it. The only black card in the pack is Bolas's Citadel, 3 triple-black. You can look at the top card of your library at any time. You can play the top card of your library. If you cast a spell that way, you pay life equal to its converted mana cost rather than pay its mana cost. And you can tap, sack 10 non-land permanents to have each opponent lose 10 life.
I really like Citadel as a build around, but you just took a 6-mana black card, and I don't think I want to load up on those. And there's a card that gives you a direction here as well in Mayhem Devil. And I think that a better pick and is cheaper, and it's one of like the more, it's actually a super unique effect because it's one of the only things that is like a payoff for sacrificing stuff.
Yeah, I actually landed on the Mayhem Devil here knowing that we had just passed Weaponize and thinking that there was a chance that Weaponize could wheel, because it often does, despite I think you and I thinking it is one of the better cards for black red sacrifice.
I mean, it's like, it's an uncommon. So sure, it was like really good in its limited environment, but I think a lot of people look at that. And I think a lot of people just look at Black Red Sacrifice in general because it feels open a lot of the time and go, eh, this deck isn't that powerful in comparison to other stuff you can do. And so I agree. I've seen the card go late and I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation.
Right. So I took the Mayhem Devil here again, hoping to find a direction because we really didn't have one. So your point about Yorian does stand from the last pack, I think, in that respect as well. So was drafting with that in mind. Pick 7 got a very late Eldest Reborn, which is way too late for that card. That's the saga that chapter 1, each opponent sacks a creature or a planeswalker. Chapter 2, each opponent discards a card. And chapter 3, put target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. And then pick 8 got Lolth Spider Queen, which is just absurd. That's one of the better cards in the cube right now. And so that just was like, okay, we're drafting plaque. And then I did end up wheeling the Weaponize the Monsters and got into an excellent black-red sacrifice deck.
You also wheeled Kolaghan's Command, which was the other card we were considering pack one pick one-ing.
Yeah, pretty decent.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, great place to wrap us up. I think hopefully we got some concepts across there from cubing. We had bigger plans, but it's hard with cube. The cards are just so complex and there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I hopefully folks like this. We would really like some feedback in terms of like, do people want to engage with cube in this way? Or is it like, maybe just like once a season is enough and back-to-back episodes. Like, I'm interested to hear what folks want out of us from a cube episode. But I do think talking about all the cards, you know, I know it's a lot of reading cards, but I do think talking about all the cards in the pack is important because I think it's super overwhelming if you haven't cubed before to look at cards, to look at all-stars from limited seasons past and go, what am I supposed to do here? So to sort of go from that first draft where we're looking at literally every card in the pack and talking about where they slot in, to then looking at drafts 2 and 3 here and really going, okay, here are the cards in consideration. I think even that sort of like microscoping in will be helpful for some folks to go, oh, Ben and Ethan aren't considering these 10 cards out of the pack. They're only looking at these four. What does that mean in terms of like, why are these cards not in consideration? They're not that, you know, upper tier of bombs. They're not that second tier of like cheap glue interactive cards or whatever. And I think that gives people a little idea about how we're approaching stuff. And then what are the cards that stand out? It's like, this gives me a direction, so I'm going to push hard down that road.
Yeah. And I think those direction cards are the most important ones to be able to identify, because once you have your direction, then it's a little less overwhelming.
Yeah, I think so. And well, then it becomes, there is a finesse afterwards of like, okay, now I know I'm in red black. You know, I feel like we could do an episode of, you know, you're in red black and now here are the choices in pack 2, pick one, right? Or whatever, of the 4 black and red cards. What do you want? Like, what fills your curve out? What is unique? What's replaceable, et cetera. It's hard.
It definitely is hard, but it's really rewarding once you start to understand it and get more comfortable, and it will make you a better drafter in normal draft formats.
Could not agree more.
All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thanks so much to channelfireball.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over to CFB for any and all purchases or signing up for CFB Pro, please use the code LOL when you check out to let them know we sent you over there. You can also check us out streaming. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome, Mr. spelled out. And we're both under those same usernames on Twitter, and you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.